Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. Today I'm joined with our co-host, Coach Nick. Nick, how are we doing today?
I'm really well, thanks Coach Steve. How are you?
I'm really well. And you know, Nick, this time of the challenge is one of my favorite times. You know, we're in week 9 this week. We're into that last phase of the challenge. And just over last weekend, we had individuals completing their week 8 check-in. And I love seeing the before and after photos, especially at this stage, right? Where the final phase of the challenge is where often people say things like the magic happens, right? It's often like the more tough side of the challenge. You know, the calories are getting lower, the training is getting harder, and you know, that diet fatigue is settling in, and you know, we've been doing this thing for 2 months now, and oh, it's getting a bit tough. But you know, at this point when people are checking in and we see the before and after photos, you could really start to see the bigger changes that happen. You know, like in weeks 1 to 4, you know, we see some small changes, but then in the weeks 1 to 8, that's when we start seeing these more moderate changes. And then of course the weeks 1 to 12 are more significant. So for me, this time is one of my favorite times. And it's always so inspiring to see individuals who check in, post their photos on places like their journals, places like Instagram, places like our Facebook social hub. And you know, you just start to see the smiles coming through in their faces. And yeah, you know, it's just so, so inspiring.
Yeah, I can see them all they're rolling in the Facebook group. Everyone's looking amazing. Don't compare yourself to anyone else. It's your own journey. And yeah, I love seeing them as well. So keep them rolling in.
Yeah, you know, we really do need to celebrate those changes. And like you said, Nick, like it's not fair on yourself to judge your progress on someone else's progress. And sure, you know, the challenge is ultimately a competition where we're comparing ourselves to others. Sure, I understand that. But, you know, it's not fair on you to judge yourself on someone else's progress. Most of the time, you don't know the background the other individual had. And if you go and listen to some of the previous top 10 finalists, many of those individuals have been training for maybe parts of their life, and maybe they lost touch with themselves because they had kids, changed jobs, got injured, whatever happened to them, and the challenge helped them just get back on track. But they had, you know, 10 years of training and experience that they fell back on. That was their foundation that was already there. So if you're just starting the challenge or just starting your fitness journey, just be cautious that you're not judging yourself and your progress on someone else's, because you don't know the background of that individual and maybe some of their training history and experiences.
Exactly. And just, you know, comparison is the thief of joy. So don't rob yourself of your own achievements by comparing.
Yeah. Now, Nick, over the weekend, yes, our check-ins, and we have a check-in prize that we can announce. So we have a check-in prize randomly selected for those individuals who checked in last weekend. So we've got 3 prizes for both Max and for Maxine. So for the guys, Max's challenge, the winners of the week 8 check-in are Howard Goodies, Arthur Foman, and Erastus Camino. So congratulations, guys.
And
for the girls, Maxine's challenge, we have Jessica Addison, Fiona Austin, and Jessica Sullivan. So congratulations to our girls as well.
Awesome.
Now, these check-in prizes are not judged at all. It's just randomly selected for people who check in over the weekend, last weekend. So big congratulations to those individuals.
Very, very good. Lucky.
Now, you have up until week 12 to complete your week 8 check-in. So if you're listening to this and you're like, oh, shit, Steve, I haven't checked in. Don't stress. Don't worry. It's fine. You just have up until week 12, which is also the end of the challenge, to do your week 8 check-in. So hopefully at that time, you're doing your week 8 check-in at least, and also completing your final check-in photos. Really important if you want to be part of the challenge competition, if you want to enter the competition to get in the top 50, top 10, ultimately win the challenge. But you know, if you're just cruising along privately and you're not interested in the competition, that's fine. You don't need to upload any check-in photos. But I would recommend it for your own documentation, you know, your own tracking your own progress. It's a great time to compare some of those photos.
Yeah, that's right. You may as well just take some, even if you're just doing it for you, which is probably ultimately who you are doing it for anyway.
Yeah. Now, as we roll into weeks 9 to 12, we are moving into a new training program. So the weeks 9 to 12 training template, you probably find that there's not a huge difference between the weeks 1 to 4, 5 to 8, 9 to 12. And, you know, that's the nature of training. There isn't, you know, any really big magical changes that happen in training. Probably the biggest thing that changes is the weight that we use. You know, a squat is going to be a squat, whether you're a beginner or an advanced person like Coach Nick here. So, you know, as we transition to those weeks 9 to 12, experiment with some different exercises. So it's always nice to kind of change up some exercises. We don't want to change them really drastically. Like we don't want to change, you know, a push-up into like a clean and jerk, you know, very two to very different movements. But you know, it's wise to make those small changes. Like let's say changing a bench press to a dumbbell chest press, similar movement, slightly different. Great way to make those changes. And you probably see those changes reflected in your programs.
Yeah, that's perfect. It is good to just make slight changes. Exactly. It definitely feels different to do a dumbbell bench press.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Now, you know, there are some individuals that are out there who might be thinking about maybe moving up to like the advanced program or something similar, or changing programs and things. You know, my loose advice would be to kind of stick to the program you're following now. You know, if you've been doing just, let's say, the beginner program for weeks 1 through 8, and maybe you're thinking about moving up to like the intermediate or advanced, you might find a little bit better progress by sticking with the same structure, just because you know that structure. You know, on like a Monday, you're training, you know, chest, back, bicep, something like that. But if you drastically change the program, let's say move from beginner to advanced, you know, we introduce different rep ranges, different sets and different organization of our program. And that might be enough just to kind of like throw out your training mood, you know? So it might be better just to stick with your current training program just because of the routine. You know, every day you're going to be doing a certain type of lift. Until we finish the challenge, and then we can make those changes. So, you know, there is some benefit in sticking to a similar training structure. Okay.
Yeah. Just take note of where you think that you'd like to improve for the next challenge, and then you could possibly go to advanced.
That's right.
Mm.
Now we are transitioning also to the weeks 9 to 12 in our nutrition workbook. So we've now moved into that week 9 to 12 nutrition template. And remember that all the data and information on your workbook is very open source. It's very individual to you, and you know, you can modify it as much or as little as you need. So for example, as we move into that weeks 9 to 12 of the nutrition template, the calories can be quite low. So the set calorie deficit for those of us who selected fat loss is minus 25%. So if your maintenance is predicted at, let's say, 2000 calories, minus 25% is 1500 calories, right? So that can be, for some individuals, a very large deficit. And especially if your maintenance calories is lower than that, let's say 1600 calories, a 25% deficit on that is down to 1200 calories. And for some of us, that can really, really suck, right? So, you know, you can modify those numbers at the very top of your template as much or as little as you want. So for example, if that minus 25% deficit is too much for you, you can change it to maybe minus 20 or minus 15. So you can give yourself a little bit more calories. If you were losing weight in weeks 1 to 4 and 5 to 8 with that energy deficit of maybe minus 10 or minus 15%, there's no reason to go further into a deficit, right? You're just adding more stress onto your body. So you could, you know, theoretically stay at the week's 5 to 8 calories if you're consistently losing weight at a rate of, let's say, 0.5 to 1% of your body weight per week. You could stay there, chill out there, and enjoy those calories while you're losing weight. You don't need to push yourself further into the deficit just for the sake of it's what the challenge says to do, okay?
That's exactly right. Exactly right. Spot on. If everything's working for you, just because it's time to drop the calories for some people doesn't mean it is for you. You stay where you are. It's happy days.
Happy days.
Mm-hmm.
I have had a couple of questions come up on the forum from individuals who have selected the muscle building program. So either the Get Strong or the Build Size and Strength program. And they were curious when the cut or the shred is for those programs. And for those programs, there is a little bit of a tapering. So they started a larger calorie surplus and then tape it down towards more of a maintenance. But there is no formal, quote, cut or lean or shredding phase in those programs. The reason being is because it's a 12-week dedicated muscle building program. You know, we don't want to be doing, like, let's say, 6 weeks, you know, dipping our toes in the water, and then 6 weeks dipping our toes out of the water. You know, we want to commit to a muscle building phase. Now, that's the strategy that we're employing on the challenge, but that doesn't mean that you can't change that. So if you're doing the muscle building program, you've been building muscle for 6 weeks and you're thinking, well, yeah, maybe I'll do a little bit of a cut for 4 weeks. I'll try to lose a little bit of body weight so that I can maybe be eligible for some of these bigger transformations that we see on the, like the Max or Maxine challenge. Sure. You know, that's totally up to you. You can do that. If you wanted to do that, you could just change from, you know, muscle building to fat loss in the week 1 to 4 template and change the program there. Or again, you can modify the strategy that's at the very top of your template. So instead of minus, you know, 25%, you could go plus 10%. So you can go the other way. Or if you are in like plus 10%, you can move yourself into a deficit of like maybe minus 20%, for example. Now, that's probably not the most optimal strategy because you may have just been at that tipping point now of building muscle. You may be, you know, let's say 20% into building muscle. You might as well do the last 4 weeks and get, you know, that tail end where we see the most muscle building results. So you might go from that 20% of muscle gain up to like, you know, 80, 90, 100% of the potential muscle gain in that last 4 weeks. So we want to be really committed to a program and not go half in, half out. Okay. But the main takeaway is that the program is very open source. You could change a lot of the numbers. You could change a lot of the things on the program to make it work for you, your goals, and the strategy that you want to take to get there.
Choose your own adventure.
I used to love those books, Nick.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
me
yeah. Too.
But yeah, I would be pressing the muscle gain door right now.
And you're constantly like flipping the book around, going from back and forward, back and forward. Yeah, yeah.
And then you see, you can't help but see what happens in the other ones.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you do decide to shred now and you're doing all, you know, you've been doing your muscle gain, just my little tip would be just stick out that muscle gain for as long as you can, you know, really. That's my little hot tip.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, just before we move on to our non-scale victories, I think it's a great time again to reflect on your journey so far. So if you are one who is starting to, you know, compare yourself to other people, maybe comparing yourself to previous versions of yourself, maybe yourself from 12 months ago or from 10 years ago, whatever it is, it's a great time to reflect on your approach to your strategy. So it's wise just to kind of give yourself again that audit, being like, okay, how well are you adhering to your nutrition strategy? Let that be if you're following the challenge program or if you're following your own program or whatever you're choosing to do, how adherent are you to that? With your training, you know, how adherent are you to your training program? Are you, you know, really trying to push yourself and progressively overload and, you know, maybe taking some sets to failure and these types of concepts? Or are you going to the gym and grabbing, you know, the 2 kilo dumbbells and that's all you're doing for the entire session? You know, other areas to really consider are things like our sleep quality, our levels of stress, our levels of hydration, and then our overall like recoverability. You know, how well do you feel? Because if you are kind of like feeling just shitty, you know, there's no chance that you're going to be training very well or looking after yourself. So it's a great time to reflect on, you know, how well are you looking after yourself, and are you moving closer towards your goal? And do you just need to kind of rethink your strategy right now if things aren't working for you?
Yeah, definitely. This is the time to do it because these next 4 weeks or so are going to fly by.
Oh, yeah. Nick, let's move on to our non-scale victories for the week. Hashtag NSVs, where we celebrate those wins that might not be related to our body weight or the scales or that number or anything like that. So Nick, take us away. Who have you found for our NSVs this week?
Okay. Hashtag NSV, because I have to say it too, because it's our favorite thing to say. All right. Kat Ford. Hello, Kat. Welcome. Come down. Come on down. Kat Ford says, I can do a push-up on my toes. Not the greatest form, but I'm pretty stoked. She had a video as well. I have to use the handle things as my wrists don't like normal push-ups. So well done, Kat. To be able to do a push-up on your toes is incredible. Well done. Good on you. Good
yeah.
Sign of strength.
That's awesome. I love when individuals learn how to do a push-up. Just a little side note about the wrist thing with push-ups. A lot of it comes down to like our kind of hand position, right? So you'll find that when people who kind of know how to do push-ups, they won't think about it, they'll just do it. The way that they contact the ground is they actually make a little bit of an arch in the palm of their hand, very similar to the arch in your foot. So if you've got wrist pain while you're doing push-ups or any sort of like pressing motions off the ground, think about that little arch position of your hand, you probably find it a little bit more stable. And then also think about, you know, kind of squeezing the ground with your fingers, and that helps create a little bit of stability around the wrist. But, you know, it can be very normal to have some wrist pain, especially if it's brand new to you. So if you're doing push-ups for the first time, of course, it's going to be a bit tender. But just a little pro tip, make that little arch, squeeze the fingers in the ground.
Oh, my gosh, we got an extra pro tip as well in our NFT. So that's pretty cool. That was for free.
That was for free. I picked that one up from a yoga instructor, actually, because, you know, lots of yoga positions, they're, you know, on their hands doing like a front support or a plank position or, you know, other types of support positions. And they probably get the I've got sore wrists a lot, right? Often yoga is a bit of like an entry level for individuals. Oh, I don't do any exercise, but I'm going to start yoga. Okay, we're going from nothing to something. Of course, their wrists are going to be sore. So that was a little tip that I picked up from a yoga instructor I heard. I was like, oh, that actually sounds kind of nice. So yeah, it worked really well. So give that a go.
Excellent. Love it. Oh, all right. So the next one we have is Chantel Adams. So week 8 check-in picks done. It's hard to get out of the mindset of finding faults in my picks. Instead of picking up chocolate, I reached out to my mentor and she helped me see all my positive changes. Learning not to self-sabotage is my biggest NSV yet. So that's exciting. I mean, that's huge. That's like an actual core development, self-development thing there. So you cannot take that away from Chantel. That's fantastic. Good on
you. That's awesome. That's awesome, Chantel. It's kind of like the movie Inside Out. Have you seen that movie, Nick? You know, that Disney movie, Inside Out?
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you remember it, they've got like the different core islands or core memories. Yeah. Yes. That's kind of like this, you know, she's introduced or maybe changed one of like the core values and principles that, you know, builds the foundation of fitness. That's awesome, Chantel. Keep it up.
Yeah. She had to pack the chocolate memory away and put it away and never see it again. Like the elephant.
Like the elephant. What was it called? Beepo, popo, something like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
There you go. Actually, it's really good to think about everything a bit like that. It detaches you and you can maybe just pack those little things up that you think form a part of you, put them in a little box and, you know, have them there but don't live there.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway,
that's for another time. Okay, so now we've got Peter Stringer. So she's very active and helpful on our Facebook group. She's always contributing, which is fantastic. And she says she's very motivating. She says the small wins are the big wins in this journey. 7 months ago, I felt helpless and defeated. Today, I feel strong and powerful, both physically and mentally. That's pretty epic. I've got to say, you know, that's yet another one that's just massive. It's like your entire approach has changed. So good on you. Good on you, Peter. And thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, that's awesome, Peter. I've got a couple of Non-Scale Victory participants as well this week. So the first one goes out to Trisha Bell. And Trisha Bell writes, #NSV, deciding on not focusing on lack of huge noticeable physical improvements, but with my consistency in healthy food choices and training sessions. And I love this because we can get carried away with, you know, maybe our appearance in the mirror or the, you know, again, the numbers on the scales or anything like that. But if we kind of focus on just making, you know, good decisions around food and focusing on our training sessions, we often find that the things that we're worrying about start to change, you know, such as our physical appearance and such. So that's awesome, Trisha, that you're focusing on healthy food choices and training sessions.
Perfect. Love it.
The next one here goes out to Nicole Nash. And Nicole writes, had a great weekend. Nutrition still on point, even after a breakfast out yesterday morning. I had a friend visiting and I was a bit nervous about trying to fit food into the plan, but managed to easily. Lifestyle changes are happening. Now going for a short jog or walk on the weekends to make sure I still hit my 10,000 steps. And I love that, Nicole. You know, it sounded like you were a little bit anxious about catching up with a friend going out for breakfast on the weekend, but you were able to still participate in that social event because that's important. You know, we want to catch up with our friends and do these social things, but then we don't want to completely derail our strategy, our approach towards, you know, our goals. So you were able to make that breakfast work for you. And, you know, those lifestyle changes are happening. So big congratulations to Nicole.
Oh, absolutely. That's the first step to basically being free of this burden of worrying about, you know, restricting and then binging and all sorts of stuff like that. Once you can get a handle on living and incorporating food as life into your lifestyle without being ridiculous, you're on your way.
That's awesome.
Mm.
The The last one here goes out to actually one of our week 8 check-in winners, Rastus Camino. And Rastus writes, "Today was another good day, relatively pain-free. Enjoyed my workout and my cardio, adding a bit of variety to my lunch while keeping an eye on total calories and macros. Must say I'm enjoying this challenge and the massive change of mindset and lifestyle it has enabled me to achieve." Rastus, that's awesome. I'm glad that you're enjoying your training and living relatively pain-free. And it's great to see that you're adding some variety into your lunch choices while keeping it within your caloric and macro targets. Big congratulations to Rastus. And of course, big congratulations to all of our NSV participants this week.
Well done, everybody. Such big, big transformations of the mind. Well done.
Awesome. Now, if you're experiencing an NSV, let us know. You can post about it in our Facebook social hub. You can post about it on Instagram. Just make sure you tag Max and Maxine Challenge or use the hashtag We Are Challenge so that Nick and I can find it. Or post about it in your journals. That's where Coach Nick and I spend a lot of time reading each and every one of your journal posts. That's always fun to read as well. And you may be featured in the hashtag NSVs on the Challenge Weekly Show.
Yay. Yeah, we do love reading the journals.
They're really cool. They're really cool. Yeah, especially when they shout out about the challenge podcast.
I know, it's pretty cool. Like, if we see our names, we're like, oh, somebody listens to our stuff. And we do the thumbs up.
I do the flex. I do the bicep flex. Yeah.
So you know that it's Coach Steve if it's a bicep flex.
Yeah. Nick, let's move on to our coach's corner where we offer our tip for the week. So Nick, take us away. What advice do you have for us?
All right. I have advices today regarding, it's a quick one, about final photos. So if you've been doing all your check-in photos and, you know, you want to be eligible for the final prizes and things, there's just some things that I've noticed that are pretty important along the way. So this is just some tips and you might go, oh, that's obvious, but just in case. So for your final photo, you want to stand front on. So you don't want to twist yourself or, we can all pose and twist ourselves and look, in bodybuilding, that's kind of what you have to do. But in this particular challenge, we want you to stand front on. A good idea is to have either a white or a neutral background. So if you can avoid taking it with a lot of clutter in the background, that's also helpful. You want to try and include your full body. So you've got some time to practice. You can do the thing that I suggest, which is make a video and do a screenshot from that. And if I'm doing any sort of check-in photos, I use my daughter's flute stand. So I just use that and I make sure that I'm in the shot. We want appropriate clothing that is neat and clean, and also something that is probably it's up to you, but maybe not too patterned. You don't want to detract from your physique, so neat and clean is always good, just for presentability. Is that a word? Yes. Now it is. Now, show your quads. That's the other thing. I mean, you know, Coach Steve and I, we don't judge it, but we like quads, and I'm sure the judges do. So if you're a guy and you're wearing long board shorts, now I know that there's a category in bodybuilding that's, I think it's physique or something like that, where they do wear the shorts. But in this challenge, we want to see your quad development. So women and men, get those quads out, you know. You obviously don't have to do a massive flex of them, but you can do a little bit. We just don't want over flexed. And definitely what we don't want to see is bicep flexes, where you're flexing your biceps up in the air, that your hands need to be by your side. So they're just a few things. The tips are actually on the website anyway, but I just thought I'd go over them just in case you're thinking any different. It really needs to be for your final photo like that. But then you've got your other 10 photos or so where you can go to town. You can go crazy. You can do all the poses in the world. But, just make sure to put yourself in the best possible position that you do adhere to those guidelines.
I like it. Yeah. So, the main takeaway is that the final competitive photos, needs to be comparative to your first photos. But in saying that, those extra photos that you want to do, like adding those extra 10 photos, or heck, even your own personal photos, like really think about those final photos, because if you put in this hard work for 12 weeks, you know, it's really great time to get like a nice photo that you could maybe like frame at home and maybe show your kids when you're a little bit older, being like, oh wow, like, you know, I had a six pack once, like look at this, you know. Well, you're gonna have a six pack forever, right? But yeah, no, it's definitely a great time to think about how you're going to complete those final photos. I know we're still 4 weeks away, but it really does make a big difference about how you approach those final photos.
That's right. And also don't forget to hold the completion document. That's very key as well, because it would really suck if you did such a great job and then you didn't hold that document.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nick, I want to talk a similar concept. I want to talk about peak week strategies. Okay, so peak week means the week leading up to your event. So in, I guess, bodybuilding and I guess in the challenge, we're talking about the same thing. We're trying to employ a strategy that would make our body in its best possible position so that we could ultimately win something like the challenge or something like a bodybuilding show, okay? We get asked this question a lot. In places like the forum and on social media about, you know, what could I do to get the best out of the last, you know, couple of weeks of the challenge? Or, you know, there'll be other kind of questions like, oh, you know, how do I do a water cut or a sodium cut or anything like that? So often our advice is to not dabble in, you know, bodybuilding strategies, right? Mainly because one, there's a large health risk involved. So if you are wanting to dabble in, you know, like a, let's say a water cut, okay, you know, severe dehydration is a thing. And, you know, depending on the climate that you're in, if you're going to cut out water, that could be very dangerous for your health. So, you know, we are not going to recommend that you do something like that, okay? And often individuals who go through a peak week strategy have practiced their peak week strategy a few times, right? So they're not going to do their first, let's say, challenge and then, you know, go and nail a peak week strategy. Individuals that would do something like that have practiced it multiple times. They know how their body responds to certain things because there's no one clear strategy that works for each individual. So let's say Coach Nick, who is a seasoned bodybuilder, she might have a peak week strategy, or her strategy might be just to simply continue what she's doing and roll into the challenge and her final competition, because that might be her strategy, okay? Because that is a very viable option to do, is just to keep doing what you're doing because you know that it works. Like, let's say you are Usain Bolt. If you have a certain routine that you do through training, through practice, you know, you want to rock up on game day knowing the what works, right? You don't want to rock up on game day and, you know, tie your shoes a different way and eat different things and do a different prep and set up and then change your stance and swap legs and try to sprint as fast as you can. That's not going to work. It's probably more optimal to continue doing the same thing as you roll into your competition, or in this case, the peak week. Okay. Now, there is a more evidence-based peak week strategy, which I'm going to talk about in a moment. And this is super summarized from a summary of the literature that I wrote up on the challenge website. So if you're interested, go to the challenge website, go to resources, go to news, and you'll find the peak week strategy, a little bit more of a detailed document. So if you are looking for a way to get the most out of your transformation, maybe to get the most out of your final photos, or maybe you're entering a bodybuilding competition and you want to get the most out of your competition day, this is what is the evidence-based strategy that is employed by bodybuilders. Okay. Now, I will say two points. One is that it's very individual. So some of these numbers might not be optimal for you. It might be, you know, slightly higher, slightly lower. And then number two, this type of strategy could influence your final photos or your final competition by, you know, 1 or 2%. So it's not going to be drastic. You know, if you're not lean, you're not lean. This strategy won't make a six pack appear. Okay. But if you are lean and you want to try to get, you know, that little bit extra, that extra 1 or 2%, you know, this strategy might be something that you wish to employ. Being in week 9, it might be something that you want to practice. So maybe this is something you do this week as preparing for your final photos in 4 weeks' time, especially if you are kind of getting lean now and you're kind of adding those extra little bits at the end. Okay, let's go through it. A little bit of numbers. So a week out up until 4 days out. So let's say you're taking your final photos on like a Sunday. So we're talking what, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So that's 7 to 4 days out. In terms of our macro distribution, we want to have about 1 gram of carbs per kilo of body weight and 1 gram of fats per kilo of body weight. So we're trying to decrease our carbohydrate intake. That's the main strategy. And then we're also having a moderate protein intake of about 2.5 grams per kilo of body weight. Our fiber intake, we want that to be below 15 grams per day throughout the whole week, just to avoid any unnecessary bloating that happens from high fiber intakes. So the way that you might modify your program is to maybe reduce some of the fruit and vegetable intake that you have, increase some protein intake, and really look for low carb options those 4 to 7 days out. Okay. Now, once we come to about 2 to 3 days out, that's when we kind of go through a carb loading. Okay. This is called like front loading. So we're loading up the carbohydrates, and we want to be having anywhere between 4 to 12 grams per kilo of body weight of carbs. Now, there's a big number, 4 to 12 grams per kilo of body weight. And that is really dependent on the total muscle mass an individual might have. So let's say if you compare Coach Nick to myself, I'm a little bit bigger mass wise than Coach Nick. So I might require the higher end of the carbohydrate intake to help maximize my glycogen stores in my muscle. Whereas Coach Nick, being a little bit smaller than me, might require a lower end of that spectrum, maybe closer to that 4, 5, 6 grams per kilo of body weight in carbohydrates. We're having more carbs. Because we're increasing the carbs, we're decreasing our fats. So about 0.5 grams per kilo of body weight of fats. And then we would also need to decrease our protein intake, because if we're having extra carbs, we need to take those calories from somewhere. So we just need to decrease our protein slightly to about 1.5 grams per kilo of body weight. Okay. Fiber, again, around that less than 15 grams per day. And this is where we want to start focusing on our water intake. So we want to have about 100 milligrams of water per kilo of body weight. Okay. So that can be quite a lot of water. So we want to just be careful that we're not diluting some electrolytes and sodium. And because of that, it's wise to increase our sodium intake as well. So if you've got a baseline of how much sodium you have, let's say, 200 milligrams of sodium a day, I want to increase by about 30 to 40%. Okay. So a little bit more sodium. Now, as we get closer to that prep day, so we're 1 day out. Now we want to drastically reduce our carbohydrates. So we're cutting our carbs to about 1 to 3 grams per kilo of body weight, fats about 1 gram, protein about 2.5 grams. So very similar to that 4 to 7 days out. So we want to do 1 day out. Fiber still low, less than 15 grams per day. And then water here, we want to be cutting our water down to about 15 milligrams per kilo of body weight. So we went from 100 milligrams per kilo of body weight 2 to 3 days out. Now we're down to 15 milligrams per kilo of body weight, about a day out. We're cutting our sodium down now below baseline. So if we were having about 200 milligrams of sodium a day, we're going to try to decrease that by about 10%. And then we're going to try to increase our potassium by about 20%, mainly because of the role of the potassium to draw water out of our subcutaneous tissue. So meaning the space in between our muscle and our skin, subcutaneous underneath the skin. So we're trying to draw water out of that. And then come the day of, we want to be having a moderate carbohydrate intake to try to fill out our muscles. So about 3 grams per kilo of body weight. Fats quite low, 0.5 to 1 gram per kilo. Protein about 2 grams per kilo. Fiber still low. Water, depending on lots of factors, anywhere between 20 to 40 milligrams per day. Sodium, again, depending on factors, we could scale that either a baseline or above and below. And then potassium still quite high at about plus 20%. Okay, so I've gone through lots of numbers. The main strategy is that we're trying to continue our current strategy to about 4 to 7 days out. We're trying to increase our carbohydrates while we increase our water. We're trying to then decrease our carbs while we decrease our water and decrease our salt. And then the day of, we're just making those small changes just to try to really dry ourselves out. Other factors to consider is the food selection. So we want to be finding foods that are easy to digest. It's probably wise to stick with the similar food groups that you have been eating, because you know how your body responds to that, especially some of those who might be sensitive to different foods or sensitive to higher FODMAP foods. So probably wise to choose lower FODMAP foods, eat easy to digest foods. Training side of things, we want to be tapering our training down to reduce inflammation. So when we train, there is an element of inflammation that occurs at our muscle levels. And if you are getting really lean and we want to look at some of those striations in our muscle, if you train, you know, there might be some genuine swelling that happens in those areas. A really classic one is like our quads. If you have a big legs day, your quads are going to be pumped. So awesome. It's going to look big, but then it can also kind of look watery. You don't see the striations. And for some individuals, that's really important. So for some of us, we might want to taper down our training to limit the inflammation that might be occurring. And probably the biggest factor to consider is like our lifestyle. So we want to really make sure that our sleep is on point. And, you know, we are considering low stress activities. So sometimes we can't completely control all of our stresses in our environment, but we do want to take as much effort as we can to experience low amounts of stress, because, you know, when we are stressed, we're just going to be holding more water and it's going to just blow out our strategy. So this strategy is what would be, quote, more optimal in terms of the evidence about the science behind it. But going back to my main point is that this strategy is very individual. You might need to modify it slightly depending on how your body responds to it. And two is that it might only provide, maybe if you're lucky, I don't know, about 1-2% difference in your total output, which is important if you're on the peak end, but might not be important if you're simply not lean yet. It might be wise just to continue doing what you're doing and following the program as it's designed, because you know how it works, you know how your body responds to it, and just cruise your way into week 12, take your photo, happy days, big thumbs up, you've done a great result. If you're looking for some really peak week strategy, you can give this one a go. And again, you can read more about it in on the challenge website, where I go through it in a little bit more detail.
Perfect.
We made it, Nick.
Oh, I love it. But also, yeah, there was just one thing that I was also thinking. Because it's not an actual event, I would probably take a picture maybe every day in the last 3 or 4 days, just in case you look better on one day to another day. Because sometimes you just don't know. And like with the shows, you don't have that luxury.
No.
Whereas with our challenge picks, we do.
Yep. Yep. You're right. So yeah, if you are trying to peak week and aim for like a photo on a Saturday, you might find on the Sunday you look better, or maybe on the Monday, or maybe on the Friday. So you're right, Nick, it could be wise taking photos across a few days.
Yeah, it's worth it, because you do have that luxury, because you know, you're going to upload that final one and you might be like, I looked so much better yesterday. That happens to me with check-ins. I might look better on one day to another. So it's like, oh, which one am I going to choose?
Yeah. Love it. Nick, let's move on to some questions for the week. And the first question here was, I think, posted on our Facebook social hub. And the question goes, ideas, please. Both my husband and I work long hours without access to a fridge or a microwave. Cool bags with ice are great, but are limited. Okay. With no designated lunch break, sometimes the meals just isn't worth the risk by the time we get around to eating it. We take snacks, things like nuts, fruit, rice cakes, protein bars, for on the run when we can eat, but looking for some ideas on something that will feel a little more substantial and will last the day. We'd love to hear your ideas. Nick, what advice would you give this individual?
Well, firstly, if you're not a member of the Facebook group, join up, because there were a lot of ideas that were given in answer to this question. So I'm not going to go over them again, because you can look them up. But I want to just quickly touch on the idea of a snack versus a meal. What if your snack became your meal, just by you adapting those things that you call snacks into a larger portion? Because in our head, we might think, rice cakes are just a snack. But if you were to add a tin of tuna to that, that would actually become then a meal. Even though a rice cake might be in your head a snack, it could actually be turned into a meal. The other thing is something like a sandwich. You can always, if you need the protein, you can always take a can of tuna with you, make the sandwich prior, and then chuck it in there while you're on the go. So these sorts of things require that kind of extra little bit of thought sometimes. But once you've got it down pat, I think that, you know, you can really just have the same meal over and over again. I think, you know, it's really worth thinking about, what's this attachment to an actual meal that you would call, I would probably say yeah, you can actually make those snacks into meals. So, you know, two pieces of fruit or whatever your meal plan allows, those sorts of things, I think that they're absolutely fine. And I have to borrow your awesome partner, Laura's thing. Just she was saying about, you know, kids' school lunches, how do they cope? So it's actually a very, very good point. So if she's listening, hello. Thank you. She helps us out, doesn't she?
She does. She does. She's she's the brains to all of coaching.
I know. She's around because that's a really good way of putting it. You know, like in kids' lunch boxes, if I was to pack my kids' lunch, I'm not going to necessarily pack something that would spoil. So I would pack things like you know, like the rice cakes, you know, things that, well, actually they pack their own now, so I can't lie and say that I know exactly what's in there. But I know my daughter cuts up, you know, carrot and cucumber, perhaps not as much now that she's at high school because it's a little bit uncool. But, yeah, just veggie sticks, and then you can always take a little bit of, you know, some chickpeas, things like that. They don't spoil. So, yeah, it's just about being a little bit organised, I think, with your time as well. So it's good to reflect upon what it is that's kind of making you think that the snacks can't be turned into meals.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. The only advice I'd give this individual is, you know, it sounds like the first line, both my husband and I work long hours without access to, you know, fridge, microwave and things like that. They've got no designated lunch break and they, you know, eat whenever they can. And I just start to wonder, like, okay, how much is your lifestyle impacting your goal? And sure, I understand that, you know, maybe they're running their own business, they're trying to work long hours, or maybe that's just how they need to make ends meet. Maybe they can't change their lifestyle, sure. But if you're working very long hours all day, every day, you don't know when your lunch break is, and maybe what are you in the car all day driving from site to site, or are you on your feet all day walking around and things like that? And, you know, is there that much chaos in your day where you can't find time to, you know, sit down and have a meal with some facilities? You start to wonder, like, is that lifestyle sustainable? Is that lifestyle helpful towards the goal that you're trying to achieve? Maybe to be fitter, healthier, lose some weight, build some muscle. Do you have time to go to the gym? Do you have time to do your steps? So there might be a bigger overarching challenge here, where the challenge is now the lifestyle challenge rather than what food could I have that won't spoil because I work really long hours and I don't have access to, you know, facilities that can be helpful for this. And then, of course, my question is, well, what were you doing before the challenge, right? What were you relying on to eat throughout the day? Were you relying on takeaway and relying on the servo and relying on restaurants throughout the day? And if you were, okay, sure. I mean, you could make some decisions around the foods you eat and still have like a takeout. You know, you could, let's say, go to a Coles or a Woolies and, you know, get a roast chicken and some, you know, some lettuce, and you could, you know, eat that somewhere, just like you would if you were going to go to a Macca's or a Subway or something that you did previously. So there's, yeah, it's time to, it would be wise to reflect on what you did before. Is that much different to what you're trying to do now? Because you might find there's some similarities between the two, and there isn't a big, what am I going to have for lunch? It's like, oh, well, I was having this. I'm going to modify that now so that I can make it work for the goal that I'm trying to achieve.
So true. And yeah, just with Subway, hot tip, just get a salad instead of the big roll thing. Calories don't allow. And you can have a double chicken chop salad, all the salads, no dressing. And it is about maximum 412 calories with two serves of chicken. Thank you very much.
112, I love it.
I know these things. I've had that all the way through any type of prep. There's just nothing wrong with it. It's delicious.
Yeah.
And yep. I'm not sponsored by Subway.
Eat fresh. All right.
maybe we'll get some Subway delivered.
All right. So next question here. It was quite a longer question, but here's the crux of it. So this individual posted on the forum and they were experiencing some pain while exercising, and they were recommended to reduce their training volume from 4 days a week down to 2 days a week. And they ask, over the next 2 weeks where my resistance training is reduced. Do I stick with the current calories or change my calories and my macros? For example, do I need to have so much protein when I'm only training twice a week? And what should I do with my carb and fat intake? My daily step count is around 10 to 13,000 steps a day. Should I change the template or continue with what I'm doing over the next 2 to 4 weeks, even though my activity level has changed? Any advice, please? Okay, let's talk about it briefly. So if you are training less, I would say you don't need to change your approach to nutrition, okay? First thing I'd say is one, with our training, you know, we're not looking at training as a way to expend energy, okay? We're looking at training as a way to stimulate muscle growth, okay? There's a difference. We're mainly using our step count as our way to measure our energy expenditure. So it looks like you are maintaining your step count of about 10 to 13,000 steps a day. That's not changing from what you're doing previously. So you wouldn't need to change your overall caloric intake is the first thing I would say. Formally going to the gym, known as our exercise activity thermogenesis, our EAT, makes up a very small portion of our overall caloric expenditure, right? Where, you know, a really hard gym session, you know, lifting weights, doing the things, you might expend, I don't know, 200 calories. But you could also then expend 200 calories by just walking for, you know, 10 minutes around the block. So it's not equivalent between the two. So the first thing, we don't need to change our calories, keep within our calorie goal. Next, this idea around our protein intake. Now, we kind of want to have a moderate, if not high protein intake when we are trying to lose weight. So if we are in an energy deficit, we want to have kind of a higher protein intake around 2, if not more, 2.5 grams per kilo of body weight, just to stimulate as much muscle maintenance as we can. Because when we are in an energy deficit, there's a high chance that we're going to lose that muscle. There's a high chance that our body wants to metabolize and break down that muscle to use as energy. If we're supplying our body with lots of protein, it helps our body to kind of maintain that muscle. So if you are maybe injured or if you are doing less training, we want to find ways to really maximize muscle protein synthesis or the maintenance or creation of muscle. So if anything, we want to maintain the amount of protein that we're consuming, let that be through supplements, let that be through animal products or plant products, whatever it is, we want to maintain our protein intake. Okay. So the main takeaway for this individual or any person who is listening to this and maybe has to reduce their training volume because of lifestyle factors, injury, whatever it is, we don't need to really change our energy intake, especially if it's only for, you know, 2 weeks or 4 weeks. It's probably wise just to maintain what we're doing, let our body heal and recover. This individual was injured, so they probably need that extra energy for our body to, you know, heal itself, right? If you've got damage and trauma in your tissues, you need to heal. So we want to maintain that energy intake. We want to maintain our protein intake. And while we're at it, it's easy to keep our proteins and carbs the same, especially if it is just for that short period of time.
Perfect. I 100% agree.
Nick, next question here. Yeah. Should I be worried about not losing weight on tone and shape? Only lost 1.5 kilos in 8 weeks. Measurements are less and strength is increasing. 90% on food and training compliance. Steps average about 10,000 per day. Iron levels up. Awesome. What advice would you give this person?
I'm hoping that you haven't included this as a trick question to see if I should still be having my coach job. Because should I be worried is, don't worry. Okay, so should I be worried? That's a bit of a loaded question. The only time you, I guess, should be worried about anything ever is if you know that you're not sticking to something or something doesn't resonate with you or the type of training isn't working for you. That's when you should be worried. But then also worry is something that you can always change. So should I go into a different direction would probably be the question that's worth asking. But should I be worried? Okay, first of all, this person says they're not losing weight, but then they say that they've only lost 1.5 kilos. So they actually, let's reframe the question. I have lost 1.5 kilos in 8 weeks. My measurements are less. So measurements are down across the board, I'm assuming. and strength is increasing. I like to see waist measurement going down, so that's a good measurement to check. But measurement's going down, strength is increasing. So this sounds like a great result so far to me. 90% food and training compliance. So look, it's never going to be 100%, but if you want to clean it up a little bit in terms of not clean the food, what I mean is like audit your food and training and try and step it up a level, because 90% usually means about 70. So if you want to go from 70 to 80, just by tweaking a few little things, you might see a bit of an increase there with the scale shifting. But to be honest, if your strength is going up, your measurements are less, chances are you're building some muscle as well. You are then losing some body fat, you're recomping, which is what we want. Your steps are 10,000 daily. Well, you can pick them up a little bit in the last four weeks. That's what I'd do. I'd probably go from 10 to 12, keep everything else normal, and iron levels are up. Well, that's great. Sounds like you're doing a very, very good job, but there's nothing to worry about here whatsoever. There's a few little things that you can order, but you should not be worried. You should be very proud of yourself.
Yeah, like I would almost rephrase that question, something like, I've lost 1.5 kilos in 8 weeks. My measurements are decreasing. My strength is increasing. My iron is up and I'm averaging about 10,000 steps per day, comma, should I be worried about not losing weight on tone and shape, right? It's rephrasing that question. It almost sounds a little bit silly being like, well, hold on, you've lost weight. Awesome. You know, your measurements are going down. Awesome. Your strength is increasing. Awesome. No, you shouldn't be worried. No. I will play a little bit of devil's advocate here, Nick. Okay, let's say 1.5 kilos in 8 weeks. If you weighed, let's say 55 kilos, you lost 1.5 kilos. Okay, that is representing almost 3% of your body weight that you lost per week, right?
That's right. Yeah.
If we are saying, you know, we want to lose between 0.5 and 1% of our body weight per week, you've lost, 3% in 8 weeks. You know, you're averaging, what's my math, like 0.3, 0.4%. per week of your body weight. All right, maybe on that lower end of weight loss that you could potentially do. Okay, what could you change there? If we just ignore all the other factors such as potential muscle gain, potentially changing a program, changes in water retention, changes in gut residue, if we ignore all those other variables and think about just this, okay, well, you can either choose to decrease your calories or increase your steps because you could potentially be losing more weight at a faster rate. So that's one thing I would say. But if it was on the other side, if you were, let's say me, I'm cruising at about 105 kilos these days, and if I only lost 1.5 kilos in 8 weeks, it's probably wise for me to reflect on my strategy going, okay, if you wanted to be in a true weight loss phase that your goal was to lose weight and you've only lost 1.5 kilos and you're 105 kilos. So you've maybe lost 1% of your body weight in 8 weeks. Sure. That's something to celebrate. Yeah. Small clap, but then also it might be worth auditing my strategy going, okay, am I really 90% compliant with my food and training? I could probably do better if I've only lost that much while in a dedicated weight loss phase. Are my calories, am I consuming too much food? Am I doing too little steps? So it might be worth an audit, you know, saying, okay, am I really doing what I think I'm doing? That's just me playing the devil's advocate here, Nick, because it's a big celebration here of the weight loss and the measurement change and the strength increase. But if there's other things to be considered in that whole story, it might be reflecting that, there could be maybe more effort put in, maybe, maybe it does need an increase in step count. Maybe it does need a decrease in a caloric intake. Maybe it does need a higher intensity in training. Maybe that 90% food compliancy does need to go up to 95, or maybe a reflection of, are you really at 90%? Or are you lower? So just some other things to consider, but the bigger takeaway is it's awesome. You're losing weight. Great. Keep going, keep doing what you're doing. And it's probably an area to celebrate rather than just to be worried about.
True. And I'm sure that everybody has already helped this person because the group is very supportive. So they've probably stepped right on in there and explained all of that as well.
Absolutely. Mm. All right, Nick, last question here. Wondering if it would be challenge approved to include a splash or two of white wine when cooking. white wine when cooking, all the W's. All right. Say making pasta sauce as an example. I'm aware alcohol evaporates when cooking, but unsure how the calories change or if they evaporate somewhat too. Okay, let's unpack this a little bit. Starting with that second bit, I'm aware alcohol evaporates when cooking with it. So correct, the alcoholic side of alcohol does change. It doesn't necessarily like evaporate. It changes its molecular structure, which means that the alcohol you consume doesn't become as intoxicating. So if you were just to drink wine by the glass, consume it, all right, you're getting a level of intoxication. But if you were to cook with it, you know, it kind of more the idea of it burns the alcohol rather than evaporates the alcohol is probably a better way to think about it. Does the calories change? No, you've just changed the molecular structure. It doesn't just disappear, right? If we were able to make energy appear and disappear, we would be breaking the laws of physics, right? Because energy doesn't get created or disappear, it just changes. So so the calories don't change, they don't evaporate either, okay? Now, let's talk about that first part, wondering if it would be challenged, approved, all right? Talking about challenge approved or not, it's probably wise to think about the language we use. In previous versions of the challenge, we were really big on challenge approved foods and non-challenge approved foods. That was following advice, you know, circa, you know, 2012 to 2015. This idea of old school thinking about restrictive diets. You know, now we understand the role that calories play, our energy plays in our body transformation. And I would go far to say that there isn't really calorie approved foods and non-calorie approved foods. There's more of calorie supported portions. Okay. So it's slightly changing to the language. So we are really interested in the overall portion sizes of different foods. Let that be lettuce, let that be chicken, let that be chocolate, or let that be wine. I would say that each one of those foods has its own nutrition levels, right? So how good it would be for our body, but for weight loss, it doesn't really matter as long as we're looking at our overall calorie intake. Going to the second portion of this question, would it be approved to include a splash or two? That's probably where the problem is, when we go, okay, how do you measure a splash or two? Is it like a little dribble? Is it a drop? Or is it a cup? Or is it a cup and a bottle? Is a bottle a splash? Or is it the whole bottle and you're having a glass while you drink it because you're cooking with it, because that's what you do, right? So that's where the problem lies in, where it might not be wise to start cooking with alcohol because, you know, or cooking with this idea of a splash or two because we can't really measure it, right? We can't confidently say that you've added 100 calories of alcohol or 200 calories or 500 calories of alcohol to your food. And then, of course, that next question is, okay, if you are trying to maximize your results, is it wise to be adding extra calories to your food, like if you're making a pasta sauce, or is it better to use like a low calorie option, let's say by, you know, just classic pasta tartare sauce? So then you could have maybe a bigger portion, because you could either have like, let's say another 200 grams of pasta, or you can have, maybe 100 grams of pasta with a splash of white wine. So we start to weigh up, okay, what would you prefer? You know, a big bowl of food or a small bowl of food with a bit of wine, right? Are both going to fill you up the same way? Are both going to nourish your body the same way? Okay, so look, the big takeaways here is that one, alcohol doesn't really evaporate. It changes its structure. The calories don't just disappear. Number two, be careful about using challenge approved foods or really restrictive kind of ideas on foods. Because if you tell yourself, I'm never going to drink white wine again because it's bad, you bet that that's the only thing you're thinking about and craving, right? So think about ways that you can modify the portions so you can still enjoy the things that you'd like to enjoy within a budget, like a calorie budget. And then the third point is that, if you're thinking about a splash or two, how do you measure a splash or two? Is it a cup? Is it a little dollop? Is it a whole bottle? And is it a wise idea to be adding extra calories to your food when you could be having a bigger portion of more nourishing foods rather than something like adding white wine to a sauce?
True. And if you're going to, you have to count it. So you just say a splash or a cup or a bottle, it doesn't count because it's in the sauce. Because that's a trick that we'll sort of play on ourselves. And what about if you changed it to oil you know, just say it was oil, you would count it, wouldn't you? So just because it's wine doesn't mean you don't count it.
I would even say like some individuals maybe with more of a Mediterranean background. So I'm not saying, Nick, your heritage, but there's some individuals where when they're cooking with olive oil, right, it's just a, it's just a splash, but the bottle's pouring for like 10 seconds. It's like, well, that's not a splash. That's our swimming pool of oil, right? And maybe that's part of the culture. Okay. But, you know, olive oil, literally 100% fats because it was oil, you know, you holding the bottle upside down for 10 seconds, that could be hundreds of calories to the meal. Sure, if the meal is going to feed 20 people, okay, maybe it's going to add only like 20 calories per serve. But if you're going to be cooking, let's say, a pasta for two people and you're adding, you know, 100 mils of olive oil to it, it might taste really awesome, great. But then that's also going to be adding lots and lots and lots of calories to that meal.
Yeah. And my dad, Roberto, shout out to Roberto. I'm not even sure if he knows I do this. he also has this thing with Parmesan cheese where that doesn't count. So.
Yeah,
he can have a whole block of it.
So I think that's just the name of the game with body composition changes. You know, we do need to consider all the foods that we're putting in our mouth. And especially if it's for like a short-term structured change to our body composition. All right, look, maybe long-term, you want to be a little bit more laissez-faire with your approach and a little bit more relaxed. Okay, you know, you could add a little bit here and there, no dramas. But if you do want to put in a really hard effort over 12 weeks and try to get in the best shape of your life and win the challenge, gosh, you got to be wanting to think about everything that you add or don't add to your foods and really trying to make wise choices about how nutritious your foods can become.
Yep, definitely.
Nick, look, let's wrap it up there for episode number 58 of the Challenge Weekly Show. Ooh, 58, oh, Nick.
We're nearly up to 60.
Nearly up to retirement age. How exciting.
That's very good.
But we're not retiring this Challenge Weekly Show. So we're going all the way to 100 and beyond.
Oh,
so,
200.
200. Why stop there, Nick? 250. Quarter. Quarter of the millennia. Nick.
Yeah, it'll be a while, but we'll get there.
We'll get there. If you've enjoyed this episode, check out the 57 other episodes and we'll catch you next week for episode number 59. Thanks for tuning in, guys. If you like the show, share it with a friend.
Or leave us a review on iTunes to spread the good word. See you next time.